Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Carving It Up Live right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. As always, I'm Bryson Carver. Very excited to be with y'all on a beautiful, and I do mean a beautiful, Wednesday afternoon. You know, a lot going on in the world of sports, a lot revolving around the National Basketball Association. Congratulations. Didn't have time, as crazy as this sounds, to do a UConn segment, but congratulations to the Huskies for winning yet another national title, the sixth since 1999. A lot of NBA stuff. Giannis is hurt. We actually got some breaking news mere minutes before the show started today. Get you caught up to the latest up-to-date stuff with Giannis and why I will reinforce my belief why he has already played his final game, or will he play his final game as a Milwaukee Buck this month in April. I'll detail that in about 15 minutes or so. Also, carving up the context, our weekly segment we do every single Wednesday, a look into the Dallas Cowboys, a report from Adam Schefter saying that they could draft a quarterback with the 24th pick. Yeah, not a fifth-round pick or a throwaway sixth-rounder. No. Their first-round pick, the Dallas Cowboys, could be a quarterback. I think for those of you that know how big of a fan I am of Dak Prescott, my take may blow your minds, like literally may blow your minds in 30 minutes or so on carving up the context. Bryson's Best 10, the other segment we do every Wednesday, my top 10 NBA teams entering the final days. We're just got a few days left of the regular season. My top 10 teams in the NBA, including one team and a couple actually that might surprise you given where I've sort of viewed them all season long. That in 45 minutes or so. And at the top of the next hour and to end the show, the Phoenix Suns down 35-4 to the Clippers, and their struggles are a culmination of the very, very reasons why from the jump, from last summer, I have never at any point believed in the Phoenix Suns this year as a championship contender. Getting to that at around 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Already got a comment up in here. Feel free to chime in the comment section. Let me know what you think about my opinions, what I'm talking about. Patrick Brown, happy Wednesday. It's rainy and cloudy here in Southern Indiana. Yeah, it's, you know, it's really humid. We just had a nasty day in Tennessee yesterday. Just nasty rain. It's no fun. So it's a little humid today, but listen, we're in April, we're over a week into the month. So listen, the weather's going to get warmer. It's going to get more humid, at least here down south and around the country, a lot going on. So appreciate everybody taking time out of their day to come join and watch this show. But first, one of the biggest games of the Western Conference was last night between my Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Lakers, and Golden State won 134-120, and as crazy as this sounds, it felt like they won the game by 40, not 14. So Golden State, and full disclosure, by the way, the Lakers didn't have Anthony Davis, who was elbowed right in the dome on Sunday against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the Lakers lost to start the week. And LeBron James, literally, according to Dave McMiniman of ESPN, literally did not show up to the arena until an hour before tip-off because he missed Sunday's game due to flu-like symptoms. And so this was sort of like his flu game. And to LeBron's credit, he was really good last night, okay? Dropped 33, 11, and 7 on 14 of 22 shooting from the field. So LeBron did his part. The Golden State Warriors, though, win, and do so, by the way, by putting on a shooting clinic. And I mean a shooting clinic. You gotta listen to this, folks. The Golden State Warriors, 26 of 41 from three-point range. That is 63% from three. They shot better than three, 63%, than they did from two, almost 59%, okay? Steph Curry went 6 for 6 from three-point range. Klay Thompson went 5 for 10 from three-point range. He had 27 to lead the Warriors. Draymond Green went 5 for 5 from three in the first half, which he has not done that since game 7 of the 2016 finals, which personally I believe to be the greatest game Draymond's ever played. And some may look into it, say, Bryson, come on. Lakers lost on Sunday with no LeBron, lost yesterday with no Anthony Davis. We know AD was awesome a couple weeks ago in the Lakers' incredible comeback. Talked about it on this very show the day after they came back and beat the Milwaukee Bucks without LeBron James. You got to have both of those guys in the lineup to be able to be successful, obviously. But this game was massive because of the simple fact that now Golden State, while they still sit at the 10 seed, they are tied with the Lakers in the loss column. And most importantly, have the tiebreaker. They took 3 of 4 against the Lakers this season. Okay, took 2 in LA, took 1 at home in Golden State, and have been able to, again, play much better basketball as of late. If you look at the last 9 games for the Golden State Warriors, they've been arguably the best team in the NBA ever since I called them out. Matter of fact, let's just take that graphic off for just a moment. Ever since I called the Golden State Warriors out, day after they lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves on the road, Steph was amazing. Nobody else was. I said, okay, the Warriors are at risk of losing Steph either this summer or next summer if he asks out, because they don't have a single consistent number two score for Steph. Like, it's just not working right now. And I'm like, the Warriors will have to go 9-3. You can put the tweet up right now. This is minutes before they play the Miami Heat on a Tuesday night game in South Beach. I tweeted this right here. It's from 2 weeks ago, March 26th. You can read it right there for the YouTube and Twitter audience. Warriors have 12 games left and sit the 10 seed entering tonight's game. I said on yesterday's show that I'm as close to ever selling my stock in my Warriors as a title threat. But if they can go 9-3 or better down the stretch, I'll maintain faith of another run. Since then, this is what they've done in the last 9 games. Fourth in offensive rating, fifth in points per game, first in field goal percentage, first in 3-point field goal percentage, ninth in rebounds per game, second in assists per game, fourth in points given up, third in net rating, and they're tied with the best record in basketball in the last 9 games. And a skeptic might say, Bryson, 9 games is a nice little sample size, but I mean, come on, you can't judge a team's outlook on the season over a ninth of the year. Fair enough. I would then, however, to the jury, present this. The last 36 games, so 4 times the sample size that I just gave you. 36 games for the Golden State Warriors. My friends, this is what they have done. 7th in the NBA in offensive rating, 6th in points per game, 9th in field goal percentage, tied for 4th in 3-point percentage, number 1 in rebounds per game. I thought the Warriors' lack of size was really going to hurt them. 1st in rebounds per game, 2nd in assists per game, 5th in defensive rating, 10th in points given up per game, 3rd in net rating, and tied for 3rd, the 3rd best record in the NBA in the last 36 games at 25-11. By every single metric you look at, these Golden State Warriors are a top 5 team in basketball. Now, I'll be giving my top 10 teams in the NBA in about 45 minutes on Bryce's Best 10. Stay around for that. Stay tuned for that. By every metric, Golden State, since late January, we're in almost in mid-April now. It's hard to believe. They've been a top 5 team. That's not to say the Lakers aren't. I still think the Lakers, with a healthy Bron, healthy AD, nobody, including Denver, wants to face them in a 7-game series. I picked Denver, but they don't want to see the Lakers in round 1. You factor all of those components into things. A Steph Curry who's down the stretch, shooting 40% from 3-point range and leading the league by a mile in 3-point makes, and is by far, by the way, the clutchest player in the NBA this season. Steph is going to win clutch player of the year. Klay Thompson, who over the last 9 games has averaged 21 a game ever since Steve Kerr put him on the bench. Klay Thompson shooting well over, over 40% from 3 and well over 40% from the field. He's been more efficient. I show this ever since the Draymond ejection against the Magic a couple weeks ago. I show this stat every show, and I'm going to continue to, given how the Warriors are playing. When Draymond is not thrown out of games, when he plays the full game this season, Golden State is 32-18. When he doesn't play, they're 11-14. When he gets thrown out, they're 1-3. So basically, Draymond don't get tossed, and you win almost over, 2/3 of your games, essentially. Not 2/3, that's bad math. But essentially, you go 32-18. You're a significantly better basketball team with him in the lineup. Golden State, ever since those back-to-back 1-point losses back in January, to the Kings at home, to the Lakers. I remember the Lakers game very well. Steph went insane. So did LeBron. LeBron hit those 2 free throws at the end. Steph was so mad, he ripped his jersey in half. It was a mess, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this may be it. A couple weeks ago, man, this may be it for the Steph, Klay, Draymond era ever since. They've reeled off 8 of 9. For the record, there were rumblings over the course of the season that, the Golden State Warriors, I think they let the wrong guy go in the little preseason incident from a couple of seasons ago in the title defense. In the Draymond Jordan Poole incident, it looks like they paid the wrong guy and let the wrong guy walk out the building. Even though Jordan Poole has been arguably the most inefficient player in basketball this season, and Draymond has been, outstanding and is the difference between the Warriors being 14 games over 500 and 3 games under 500. All those rumblings. And the Golden State Warriors a year ago, I talked about it ad nauseum on this show, were 11-30 on the road last season. That's funny. This season, take a nice little look at the NBA Western Conference standings. The Golden State Warriors are, 24-16 on the road, including 16 of their last 20 away from the Chase Center. So let's see. They can win on the road. They can defend at a high level. They're one of the best shooting teams in the NBA. One of the best rebounding teams in the NBA. They move the basketball well. They have a top five player in the world. They have a top five coach in the world. Yeah, that sounds like a championship contender to me. This is the very reason that as close as I came multiple points in the year to being like, I don't know, I might be close to selling my stock. There was a loss to Denver in January when Jokic had a half-court shot. The Warriors blew an 18-point fourth-quarter lead. I'm like, I don't know, man. This is probably not it. There was a loss. Again, the Lakers loss in late January. I'm like, I don't think this is going to work out. I'm not going to sell my stock just yet, but I'm darn close. A couple of weeks ago, the loss to the Timberwolves. Steph's not getting any help. They're not playing good basketball when you really want to be playing good basketball. I'm not going to sell stock just yet, but if the Warriors can go 9-3, I'll maintain faith. Well, they get back to their old ways. Now they're not going to make 26 threes a game. That's not realistic. The Warriors' record, single season record for three-pointers in the game is 27. They obviously were one short of that last night. That's not going to happen. Draymond's not hitting five threes a game. Although, if you look at Draymond Green's stats this season, it's quite kind of funny. Draymond, he can't shoot. You can sag off him. I kept seeing Darvin Ham apparently was telling his Lakers defenders, sag off Draymond Green, who's this season. Do we have the numbers? Draymond Green this season from three-point range is shooting 39.5%. That's pretty good. And by the way, from the field, is shooting almost 50%. Sag off Draymond Green. Yeah, great game plan, Darvin Ham. But the point of all this is, Draymond is not peak Draymond, but man, he's still good. Klay, and I have been really hard on Klay this season. At the start of the year, I'm like, trade Klay. He's an expiring contract. He's expensive. See what you can get for him. Somebody will take him. He's a great shooter, you know, good teammate. Klay looks like the old Klay. If he can, the last nine games, last 36 games, last 20-odd games ever since Kerr put him on the bench and then put him back in the starting lineup a couple weeks back, if Klay Thompson can be some semblance of this in the playoffs, because if you remember a year ago, Klay was bad in the playoffs, especially against the Lakers. He was horrendous. If he can be this, think about this, folks. Oh, this bad season for Golden State. Funny. They've already tied last year's win total. They won 44 games last year, 44 this year. Now, the ironic thing is they were the 6th seed a year ago. They're going to be best case the 9th seed this year in the play-in tournament. But all things considered, all the you-know-what Golden State's been through, and you look at those players' faces last night, they're smiling. They're cutting up with each other. They're playing great basketball. The vibes are back, unlike a year ago when Jordan Poole screwed up the locker room. All of a sudden, you look up and you're like, they're back. Matter of fact, they never left. They came close to leaving the party a couple times. You know, the bullies at the club, you know, try to kick them out, but they, no. We've been here. We've done this before. Golden State, 134. Lakers, 120. They look pretty good, if I do say so myself. Check the comments section. Patrick Brown. Jordan Poole, the Shaq to Nafool player of the year. Oh, you don't say. Oh, we saw that a lot last year. In Golden State, with him, this clowner. I mean, that's the only word I could think of that would signify what Jordan Poole's done this season. Looks like we're dealing with some connection issues. We good? I got my monitor up here. I think we're good. Okay, just want to make sure. The monitor was acting funny. Looks like the connection, Wi-Fi connection is good. So just want to make sure of that. Yeah, we'll make sure 100% before we can move on to our Bucks topic because I don't want the connection to be bad for future YouTube clips or Instagram or TikTok, stuff like that. Okay, so again, and as far as the Lakers are concerned, look, I'm all season long, I've said I'm not selling my Warriors stock, not selling my Lakers stock. I am very close to selling my Lakers stock because if you don't have a healthy AD and LeBron, you're not going anywhere. You need both of those guys healthy, ready to go. LeBron, while still great, is not, again, as I use 2018 LeBron, where he can take a terrible team to the freaking finals. He's not that anymore. Not to mention, one thing that's going to play the Lakers, and I think it's going to be their undoing, regardless if they get in the playoffs or not, regardless if LeBron and AD are healthy or not, is Darvin Ham's rotations are abysmal. I mean, the stretch is like late third quarter. There's a stretch late third quarter, I think late first quarter, early second, something like that, where he was playing five guys together. It was like D'Lo, Hachimura, Jackson Hayes, like guys like that. 80's out, LeBron's on the bench, and you put Austin Reeves, who in this game is your second best scorer, on the bench with LeBron. Like, why at all times LeBron and Austin Reeves, one of them is not on the court at all times, is beyond me. I mean, and listen, I'm not asking LeBron to play, you know, 40 minutes. And LeBron last night, by the way, you know, flu-like symptoms, did play 36 for what it's worth. So basically three full quarters of action. Austin Reeves played 35 minutes. They should be, again, either on the floor together or, you know, separate. One should be on the floor or one should be on the bench at all times. So those rotations last time by Darvin Ham were confusing. I think that will do the Lakers in, whether they get in the playoffs or not. And listen, I know they're the 10 seed. I know for the record, they're going to be the 10 seed because Golden State isn't going to lose down the stretch. They're going to go 3-0. They're going to beat the Blazers. Blazers are a bad team. They're going to beat the Blazers tomorrow night, beat the Pelicans Friday, and beat the Jazz on Sunday. And then get into the postseason. Worst case, the 9th seed, potentially the 8th seed. We are really dealing with some connection issues. I don't like what I'm seeing right now. Let's see if you know what? See if we can maybe pull something up here. Here's what we'll do. If the connection continues to get problems, we'll see if we can like play a video or something to I don't think we have one, unfortunately. But point of it all is, yeah, connection problems are occurring. So okay. So here's what we're going to do. So I'm going to back out of the show, reconnect it, and go back in. So stand by for about a minute, because again, connection problems is for some reason giving us issues. I'm going to get out of here, put the show back on in like a minute or less, get the connection back working again. So we'll be right back in just a second, live on Carving It Up. We'll be right back. We should be back in the show right now, hopefully with a better connection. That was a little Wi-Fi issue sometimes where I'm at, so we should be good to go. Monitor looks good. Connection looks good. Hopefully you guys can hear me loud and clear, so hopefully that wasn't too much of an issue. Okay. Patrick Brown, Darvin Ham. Yeah, it's bad. The rotations he puts out there and the game plans, again, look, I get you'd rather Draymond shoot than Clay or Steph, but again, this is a darn near 40% three-point shooter. Like, Draymond usually makes one or two threes a game. Like I say, it's usually early on. But once Draymond hits two, it's like, yeah, go ahead and push up on him a little bit. Again, but that's also a credit to the Warriors where, okay, if you're going to sag off one of the three, Steph, Clay, or Draymond, that's an easy answer who you're going to do that on. But at the same time, man, Jackson Hayes, D up on him a little bit. Draymond's not at the stage of his career where he can beat you off the dribble. So, odd game plan by Ham. Patrick, we got the Grizzlies and Pelicans to finish the season. Hopefully AD comes back somewhat healthy. At this point, Patrick, and thank you, he says audio and video is better. Great. When do the Lakers, so the Lakers next game, you said against the Grizzlies and Pelicans. I'd sit AD for the Grizzlies game. You can beat Memphis without Ja, obviously, with no Anthony Davis. So I would play, you know, LeBron, play all the guys, as long as LeBron's, you know, over the flu. Play them against Memphis. That would be tomorrow or Friday. Friday, get a couple days off. Play AD in that last game in New Orleans. You could be in a position to grab the 9 seed if Golden State were to lose, which I don't think they are. I think the Warriors are going to run the table from here, go 3-0. And frankly, to be completely honest, I think Sacramento is going to go 1-2. Golden State's going to go 3-0. And in what looked like Season from Hell Part 2, Golden State weathers the storm, goes 11-1 down the stretch, nabs the 8 seed. I mean, are you kidding me? And if they win the 7-8 game, they're the 7 seed. Now, you'd like to avoid Denver, but if you're in the 7-8 game, you essentially control when you play Denver. Because you're going to face them. Everybody's going to face Denver at some point. They're by far, to me, the team to beat out West. Top 10 teams in the NBA coming up in about 35 minutes or so. But that's where I'm at on Golden State. By the way, massive game, Denver and Timberwolves tonight. Denver is a 6.5-point home favorite. That game tips off at 10 Eastern on ESPN. That one will basically decide the one seed because Denver and Minnesota are both tied right now at 55-24. It'll essentially decide the one seed because both teams only have two games left in the season and have to hope the other team, I guess, loses twice, depending on tiebreakers. Shifting now to a team that I've been hard on for a few months now, and I think I've been pretty validated in doing so is the Milwaukee Bucks. So it just gets worse. The nightmare season for Milwaukee continues to get worse. So coming into this game, I laid out the Doc Rivers stats. Ever since they, again, I defended Milwaukee firing Adrian Griffin because there were some serious locker room issues. I mean, Terry Stotts left the team before the season started, so there were some issues there. The Giannis Dame fit is clunky at best. Maybe it'll take another season to get it right, but I'm quite pessimistic on that, and I love both players. I just don't think they fit together. They fire Adrian Griffin, kind of the David Blatt situation. And by the way, Cavs fired David Blatt, brought in Ty Lue, won the title. So it obviously worked for them. And I think the Bucks made the right decision in firing Adrian Griffin. But when they brought in Doc Rivers, I said their season is over. We know Doc Rivers, when he's down, or sorry, rather, even worse, when he's up 3-1, has lost three times. He's horrible in game sixes and game sevens. And as a stat I gave out this week or on Monday, and I've given out multiple times this season, when Doc Rivers, think about this, folks, digest this on your Wednesday night. When Doc Rivers gets his third win in a best of seven series, after that point, he has a 33% winning percentage. It's bad. So all that component onto it as well. And it just got worse. So yesterday, in an impressive win over the Boston Celtics, who weirdly didn't shoot a free throw, which I found really strange. It's been an odd end to the NBA regular season. Boston didn't shoot a free throw. Boston had nothing to play for. They don't have anything to play for. They've locked up the one seed home court throughout the playoffs. And here's what happened. Milwaukee's up. They did end up winning this game, but Milwaukee's up big third quarter. Boston, I think Derek White makes a corner three. And this is Giannis after inbounding to Damian Lillard. We'll show it off for the for the YouTube and Twitter audience and sort of narrate it for the podcast audience. Here's Giannis. No contact whatsoever, goes down on the floor. We'll show it a couple more times here. Giannis injured, goes down. He's holding that lower calf Achilles area. Again, no contact, isn't, you know, pushed by anybody. There's nobody in the vicinity of Giannis, and he goes down right there, which, and he obviously limped to the locker room, didn't play the rest of the game. We did get an update minutes before the show started tonight that said, I think it was from Chris Haynes or from Woj, one of the two, that say that Giannis Antetokounmpo is, do we have it right here? Okay, according to Shams Charania, rather, and Chris Haynes reported right after, Giannis Antetokounmpo will miss the remaining three games of the regular season and receive daily treatment and evaluation on the calf strain. And again, Chris Haynes echoed that same report not long after. So Giannis is going to miss the rest of the regular season. Milwaukee right now is the two seed. They're a game up on the Phoenix Suns. It's kind of going to be, the Phoenix Suns. The New York Knicks battle for that two seed is going to commence over the last few games of the regular season. I haven't believed in Milwaukee all season. I think that goes without saying, or certainly since the Doc Rivers hiring. Obviously, if Giannis is gone, any shot they had is obviously goes up in smoke. One thing I will say, if this makes Bucks fans feel any better, and obviously that report, it's not like, oh, Giannis suffered an Achilles injury. I figured it wasn't like a torn Achilles or a ruptured Achilles like what we saw with Kevin Durant. Because remember when Kevin Durant got hurt, when he first injured that Achilles area and the Warriors said calf strain, BS, that was an Achilles injury. Remember when Kevin Durant made a shot against the Houston Rockets? It was a playoff game. He jogs back the other way, no contact, and then looks back like, who kicked me? And he holds the Achilles area. He's like, who kicked me? That's what everybody who tears an Achilles says. It feels like, initially, it feels like somebody kicked you. And obviously nobody did. It's something snapped in your lower leg. If you watch Giannis, we'll show it one more time. If we can show the Giannis video one more time. Giannis does not look back. He just goes down. He doesn't like, oh, who kicked me? He doesn't do that, which is a good sign. No doctor, not going to play one of this podcast, but generally speaking, every athlete that's ever hurt an Achilles or torn an Achilles, that tends to be the issue. So Giannis should come back for the playoffs. And he will play his final game as a Milwaukee Buck in these playoffs. I said this on Monday. And over the last few weeks, again, Milwaukee is 16-17 since Doc took over. They're middle of the pack in virtually every, like Golden State, they're the anti-Golden State. Golden State, the last 36 games, top five, top 10 in basically every category imaginable. Field goal percentage, defense, offense, all that. Milwaukee's middle of the pack in virtually every category. Okay, they don't play defense particularly well. Their offensive rating for an offense that's got Giannis and Dame, they're like 17th, I think, in the NBA in offensive rating since Doc Rivers took over to be the head coach. A lot of that is Doc, and a lot of that also is, again, the lack of fit between Giannis and Dame. My man Barry Grant Jr. pointed this out. We were talking on the phone a couple weeks ago, and he said, watch the Giannis and Dame pick and roll. Because Dame doesn't have a mid-range and Giannis doesn't have a jumper, it's a one-dimensional pick and roll. So, and Barry pointed that out. That's not my basketball analysis. That's his. So give him the credit for it. But he's right on that. Think about the Milwaukee Bucks. And again, I forgot to bring this up earlier. All stats are provided by our friends at StatMuse. All graphics provided by my man Alfred Parsar Jr. of the Grid Network. The Milwaukee Bucks are basically the Buffalo Bills, but with a championship. And what I mean by that is, remember Buffalo made the AFC title game in 2020. Josh Allen came in second for MVP, and it's like, oh, here come the Bills. And for the last 3 years, oh, the Bills are going to knock off the Chiefs, and they never did. But they kept going backwards. That's Milwaukee since they won the title. Here's this graphic. Again, all stats provided by StatMuse, all graphics provided by Alfred Parsar Jr. Shout out to Alfred. Milwaukee Bucks won the NBA title in 2021, right? 2022, loss of a second round. Last year, lost in the first round. This year, we'll see. But given right now where the playoffs sit here today. So the Bucks right now would be the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. Okay, and they're in a lose-lose scenario no matter where they face. It went with or without Giannis. Without Giannis, obviously, they're cooked. They're the 2 seed right now. If the play-in standings, let's say for the sake of argument, Philly-Miami play, let's say Philly wins. Well, let's see. Embiid looks amazing. And for his sketchy playoff history, he's good in the first round. Embiid's first round stats, second round stats, night and day. So Philly with Embiid, with Maxey has been great. Tobias Harris, Nick Nurse, massive upgrade at head coach with the guy who's, you know, the guy who replaced Doc Rivers. And Doc Rivers is now coaching the Bucks. So Philly has the coaching advantage. Embiid is absolutely, in terms of from a skill perspective, on Giannis's level. Philly's deeper. Philly's, you know, better offensively, certainly with Embiid's in the lineup. I think Philly would win that series. If they draw Miami, well, let's see. You know, that's been the team that's knocked off Milwaukee twice in a gentleman's sweep in the last 5 seasons. So that's a terrible matchup for Milwaukee. If they fall to the 3 seed, if the Knicks jump them, Milwaukee falls to the 3 seed. Let's see. They get the Pacers, who they, you know, have beaten one time this season. And the Pacers have just, I mean, run up the score on Milwaukee. Like, Milwaukee can't stop them. Not many teams can. Indiana's a great offensive team, can't play any defense, but it's another bad matchup for Milwaukee. So no matter the matchup, the Bucks are screwed in the first round. So if they go out in round one, and I believe they will, I think Giannis is going to ask out this summer. And I think we know Giannis is going to ask out this summer because I think he was on the verge of doing so a year ago. Remember, Giannis had those quotes. They lost in the first round to the Miami Heat. And he says that if the Bucks are not intent on putting a title team together, or putting a team together that's capable of competing for a championship, then I'll have to leave. And the Bucks, in response, similar to how they did in 2020, by acquiring Drew Holiday, trade Drew Holiday to get a superstar in Damian Lillard. You know, multi-time all-star, has never gone deep in the playoffs because Dame's not a guy who can lead you to a title. He can absolutely be the second best player given the right fit. And again, the fit with Giannis just hasn't worked, and it's just been kind of clunky. Now, you could say, well, Milwaukee's the 2 seed. Boston's better than everybody out east. They're up on the Bucks, I think, like 14 games in the Eastern Conference standings. I mean, Boston's destroyed everybody. But if you watch the games, you watch the offensive pick and roll, the defense has not been good at all. And it was always good. Say what you want about Budenholzer, and I was very critical of the guy. His defenses were always good. That was never the issue. They were a little one-dimensional offensively, but they could play defense. Given that it's a small market, given that they're not exactly drawing in free agents. I mean, Cleveland is not L.A. as far as a market, but it's bigger than Milwaukee. I mean, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, they got 3 teams, Cavs, Browns, and Guardians. Ohio State football, not far, you know, not too far away. Bron couldn't get a free agent in Cleveland. You tell me Giannis can in Milwaukee? Nobody's again, as I said on Monday, no NBA superstar is going to go to his family. Hey, honey, hey, kids, pack up. We're going to Milwaukee. The star player ain't going to say that. Kareem left. Kareem got a title, dipped in the late 70s or mid to late 70s. That's what I think Giannis is going to do. Hopefully not to the Lakers, although they could be a potential candidate, although I don't really know what assets they have to give Milwaukee. But the Knicks have a ton of assets. The Warriors have a ton of assets. Miami could make a push. Probably have to be like a 3-team trade, but they could make a push. Giannis will look at these teams. Look at the Golden State Warriors as its championship culture. He'll view the Miami Heat the same way. He'll look at the New York Knicks and say, okay, they got a point guard in Jalen Brunson who does have a mid-range, who does have a consistent floater. Tom Thibodeau, great defensive coach. Doc Rivers is not. We got a better coach. I get a co-star that Brunson, I don't think, although you could make a case Brunson might be better than Dame, and I love Dame, but it's close. a similar co-star who fits better, a better coach, deeper roster, and I get to stay in the weak Eastern Conference. Golden State, championship culture. I get to play with freaking Steph Curry. Who doesn't want to do that? KD got to play with Steph, got two titles out of it. I think Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to play his final game as a Milwaukee Buck this month. Because at this point, what other moves can the Bucks make? I mean, it'll be a... Assume they move on from Doc, which... Doc may resign. They may not even have to make the decision. Doc may make it for him. Because Doc, you watch these press conferences, man. He looked like he didn't want to be there, which is odd because he took the job mid-season after having kind of a cush announcing job for ESPN. So, but Doc was like, yeah, I see why I didn't stay in coaching to a certain extent. But if Doc leaves, they fire him. That'll be four head coaches in 3 years in Milwaukee. That'll be, in all likelihood, I believe, two first-round exits in a row. That will be a co-star in Dame who's getting older, is very expensive, and doesn't fit with Giannis. An older roster, Brook Lopez. I mean, Bobby Portis is the quote-unquote young guy. He's almost 30. I'm telling you, I think this is going to be history, where they say history often repeats itself. This is literally going to be like Kareem in the 70s, where it got to a point, and Milwaukee came close to winning other titles in the 70s, but never got to where they were, obviously, in 1971. And Kareem at the end was like, I want to play for a better organization and one that can draw in free agents. Thus, Kareem ended up a Laker, got another five titles out of it. I think it'll be exact same thing with Milwaukee's next superstar, Giannis, doing something similar. And for the record, his tenure in Milwaukee was very successful. Two MVPs, Defensive Player of the Year, and the man won a freaking championship. That's all that Milwaukee could have asked for. So I don't think there'll be any vitriol toward Giannis in Milwaukee, but that's where we're at. That's where the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis will play his final game as a Buck this month. Patrick Brown. Oh, Patrick does not like Doc Rivers. Is there a Doc or a doctor in the house? Buck ain't out the woods yet. The scariest movie in sports is Doc Rivers in a game 7. Indeed it is, sir. Or in a game 6 as well. You could argue even in a game 6, but game 7 is even worse. Right? It's like the back-to-back Alien movies. Like, I prefer the original over Aliens, personally. I like the original. I like the horror feel a bit better. Not that I'm against the typical 1980s action movie, James Cameron, all that, but I don't know. The first one is just classic. It's a classic horror movie. Like, the actual monster, you don't see it. I think, how long do you see it in the movie? Like, just for a few minutes combined, I think? Like, you barely see it, but it's the main character, essentially. Like, that's Doc Rivers. Patrick, if Patrick's still here and to the rest of the audience, like, I feel like the first one's scary in the second because the second, the monsters are everywhere. It's like a bug infestation. Like, they're everywhere. So you, like, expect them to come. The first one, you're like, where the blank is this thing? That's kind of where I'm at with Doc Rivers. So, like, Doc Rivers in game 6 is Aliens. Doc Rivers in game 7 is Alien. Singular, the first one. It's a great movie, by the way. Fantastic. Let's see. Oh, sorry. I thought we had some breaking news just come in. Never mind. My bad. By the way, WNBA draft this coming Monday. Caitlin Clark's going to go number one of the Indiana Fever. Saw this today where the Indiana Fever, not doing a segment on this, but I figure it should be mentioned. The Indiana Fever had one nationally televised game a year ago. Out of 40 games, they had one nationally televised game. This year, 36. So again, star power is a very real thing in sports, and Caitlin Clark certainly provides that. And I saw with the Vegas Aces, the back-to-back WNBA champions, kind of the new dynasty of the WNBA, they moved their game against the Indiana Fever to T-Mobile Arena, which is where the Golden Knights, the hockey team, plays their home games to get an extra like 2,000 seats. Because the place can be sold out to see Caitlin Clark. So we're going to talk about this, by the way, in an hour and a half on the 8 o'clock spot. We're doing a special 8 o'clock spot on a Wednesday night. We typically go on Tuesdays. So we're going on a Wednesday. And I'm the host / judge / moderator. We got the same returning cast as we had from a week ago. So Barry Grant Jr., who won the show, John Rivera, Fan Perspective podcast host, as well as Keith Nandon, a brand new contributor to the 8 o'clock spot to the Grid Network. He's going to be on as well. So the same three from last week. We had a very fun time. So definitely be sure to check that out again in about an hour and a half at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time, live on the Grid's YouTube channel and the Grid's Twitter account. And so we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about. We are going to talk about Caitlin Clark and can she save the WNBA. But that stat, though, right, 36 out of 40 games for the Indiana Fever will be on national television. I'm telling you, have they put out the full schedule? Okay. Well, this says May 3rd. Oh, that's a preseason game. Okay, so that didn't count. But we don't care about the preseason. Okay. Is this okay? So Caitlin's first game will be against the Connecticut Sun at Connecticut. This will be at 7:30 Eastern on ESPN2. That's going to be on May 14th. So that is on a Tuesday. You know what I'd be curious to see, folks? And then we'll move on to carving up the context. We're holding the Dallas Cowboys in quarterback selection. You guys are definitely going to stay tuned for that because I got a crazy opinion and a crazy theory on what could happen. But Fever Sun, Tuesday, May 14th. Okay, so that's middle of the NBA playoffs. That's like end of the second round. Conference finals area. Well, actually, that'll be like start of the second round. I'm curious what the games will be that day in the, because again, NBA playoffs, that's the moneymakers for Adam Silver, for the TV networks, for everybody. I'm curious to see how that game will do against an NBA playoff game. Like if it's Boston, who's a four seed, Orlando, or who's the other five seed right now? Yeah, shoot. I'm blanking out East. Because then the Knicks are the three seed right now. Five seed out East is the Cavs. Okay. So it's, say, Boston against Orlando or Cleveland versus Caitlin Clark's debut. Because it'll tip off around the same time, East Coast. I wouldn't bet money that Caitlin's game will get better ratings than a second-round NBA playoff game. But I'm just saying, it depends on what the game is. I don't know. I mean, Boston-Orlando is not that intriguing of a matchup. But Boston-Cleveland, I'm not going to lie to you. Cleveland's not getting out of the first round. It's Cleveland. So in all likelihood, Boston-Orlando. Or Boston-the Knicks might be different. If it's at Madison Square Garden, that'll probably beat the Fever game out. But there you go. So, Caitlin Clark star power. It's a very real thing. All right. So there's a segment we do every Wednesday. It's called Carving Up the Context. And it's a segment where there's a story that has been discussed and has been amongst the sports talk media. Amongst fans, amongst social, people on social media. And there's one story revolving the Dallas Cowboys that might sound crazy to some or maybe even unrealistic to some. To me, crazy as it sounds, I actually think it has a chance of happening. And I'll detail that on this week's edition of Carving Up the Context. So as primetime, Deion Sanders himself says, give me my theme music. On this week's edition of Carving Up the Context, we have some interesting news from Adam Schefter. This came out yesterday. Adam Schefter was on NFL Live. This was yesterday. He was talking about the Cowboys and talking about, you know, there's obviously the looming Dak, Jerry Jones contract negotiation. Dak only has 1 year left in his deal. I talked about that ad nauseum on this show. Hopefully I'll talk about it less now than I did 4 years or 3 or 4 years ago, because, man, that story got really old really quickly. But Dak, the Cowboys seem content. They're going to play this thing out, and he's going to be a free agent in 2025. And I've said it, Dallas either needs to extend him and fix their terrible salary cap situation or trade him and get something for Dak. If they just let him walk, that's bad business. Adam Schefter on NFL Live yesterday, quote, "What are they going to do at quarterback if they lose Dak? That's interesting. And that's why I think the Cowboys might be a sleeper team in the quarterback market during the draft. Because at some point in time, they may have to draft a quarterback higher than you think. Because Dak is going to be in the last year of his contract, and it might be time to get someone in there to start grooming him." End quote. Now, this is not coming from me, some other podcast host, or a sports talk guy or gal in Dallas. This is coming from Adam Schefter. This is, you know, we get all of our breaking news in the NFL from Schefter, Ian Rappaport, all these incredible insiders, but he's the man, Adam Schefter. This isn't just him out. You know, maybe the Cowboys are a sleeper. Folks, Adam Schefter is the most connected human being in the NFL. He's on his phone. I don't know how the man sleeps at night or sleeps at all. He's on his phone all the time, contacting people, getting the latest news and information. I was thinking about this, carving up the context. Why would Dallas move Dak Prescott? No, that's a question I've asked many, many, many times. I've used Washington as an example, Washington Commanders, where Kirk Cousins was there and, You know, Kirk isn't as good. And I think Dak's better than Kirk, by the way, by a significant margin. But Kirk Cousins, he's not Brady. He's not Drew Brees. Like, I don't think he can get us the next level. Let's just let him walk. We franchise tag him twice. We're just going to let Kirk Cousins walk. Yeah, how's that worked out for Washington? You could say, well, what about Kirk? He only won one playoff game. It's better than what they had. Sam Howell, and I think Washington has started like 11 different quarterbacks since Kirk Cousins left in free agency in 2018. How's that worked out for Washington? Because what they had then is what Dallas has now, an impulsive, meddling, egomaniacal owner. Here's the thing, though. Now, Jerry Jones may be a brilliant businessman as it pertains to marketing the Dallas Cowboys. They are, after all, the most valuable sports franchise on planet Earth, the Dallas Cowboys. Star, Frisco, AT&T Stadium, the whole bit, on TV every week. As a GM, he leaves a lot to be desired. But if Jerry doesn't extend Dak, which to me, I want to emphasize this as much as I can, I think he'd be out of his mind not to extend a quarterback at the level of Dak Prescott. Dak, the last year, if we have the stats, was outstanding. And do we have this in virtually every statistical category? A year ago, Dak Prescott, second in completion percentage, second in touchdown interception ratio, second in QBR, and third in offensive target percentage. I'm not sure what that stat means, to be completely honest with you, but I saw it and I thought it looked good, so might as well add that. Dak's a great quarterback. Is he Mahomes? No, because nobody is. Is he Burrow? Is he Lamar Jackson? Is he Josh Allen? He's actually closer to Allen than you think, but no. But if they don't extend Dak, and you have the 24th pick in the draft, we all mostly assume that the first four quarterbacks of this draft, in no particular order, we know Caleb Williams is going number one in Chicago, but the other three are as follows. Jaden Daniels, who I will put it out there today, he's going to Washington. Like I've heard for weeks, Jaden Daniels is going to the Washington Commanders. Like we don't even need, there doesn't need to be any drama about it. Drake May's not going too. Jaden Daniels going number two to Commanders. And then Drake May and or McCarthy, J.J. McCarthy, who I don't totally get the hype around him. That aside, those would be the first four quarterbacks selected. We can put up the draft board right here, okay? So these are for the podcast audience, I've got the NFL draft first-round selection board up right now on the screen. Dallas sitting there at 24. Now, Minnesota has two first-round picks at 11 and 23. They, to me, likely trade up with the Chargers in all likelihood. That'd be a great trade for the Chargers. Get some more picks for Jim Harbaugh to be able to select the guy they want. McCarthy, Drake May, whoever it is. But the two quarterbacks that most draft and analysts think will slip. Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. I think Bo Nix is fine. I think he's a second round-ish talent. I don't love his arm strength, leaves some things to be desired. He's probably, to me, he reminds me of a much better Kenny Pickett. And against a Steelers fan, yikes. Kind of feels like he's reached a ceiling. Like, why has he been in college since pre-COVID? Michael Penix Jr. has been in college a while, though. But however, this, a lot higher upside. Better arm, more accurate. Mobile enough. Is he going to be Lamar Jackson? No, but he can move. If, and I want to emphasize this, and only if Michael Penix Jr. is available and the Dallas Cowboys are on the clock with the 24th pick in the 2024 NFL draft, they should select him. If they're doing smart business, if they don't extend Dak, they're crazy to let him walk. Crazy. Let him walk for nothing. Because some team will outbid Dallas. Then what do you do? You say, wait, why would you take Penix? Here's why. Let's be honest with ourselves for a second. Look at the NFC. Do we really, honestly, take Dallas that seriously as a Super Bowl contender? Because I don't. San Francisco, we've seen what San Francisco's done to Dallas. Every year they beat him worse. San Francisco's better. Detroit's better. I think we saw Green Bay's absolutely, Green Bay stomped Dallas in Dallas. Green Bay's better. I think the Rams are better, but Stafford, and at that point it's like, is it Dallas, Philly? It's kind of a tug of war between those two teams. Fifth or sixth best team at best in the NFC. And there's always every year, Houston was the team last year. There's always one team a year like, wow, they came out of nowhere. Who knows? Maybe it's Chicago with Caleb Williams. We'll see. What pick in the first round would convince skeptics like myself? Oh, Dallas. Okay, they're back. That is a contender. Because the receiving core is one of the weakest in the league, absent CeeDee Lamb. The offensive line lost, you know, the second best left tackle in the league in Tyron Smith. The defense has had to shave off some of their key pieces. The organization, more on this in just a moment, is reportedly, quote, fed up. And as their patience has worn thin with Micah Parsons. How are they a contender? They're not. So now, if you're smart and you don't extend Dak, you go into a rebuild. You take Michael Penix Jr., then here's what you do. Here's where it gets fun. Patience has worn thin with Micah Parsons. Then trade him. And I think this is just a sample team. This is an example trade, mock trade. Jacksonville has one of the single worst pass rushes in football outside of Josh Allen, who they did just extend today. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars, we have this up here, could trade for Micah Parsons. Dallas would get a 2025 first rounder and a second rounder in that year and a 2026 second rounder as well. So a first rounder and two second round picks. For the record, Khalil Mack, the trade of the Chargers, I'm sorry, the Bears did not get a first round pick in return for Khalil Mack. Now Parsons is better than Khalil Mack, but that said, you have that. So Parsons, gone. You get first round picks in return. Well, if you draft Michael Penix Jr., Dak's not going to be there beyond 2024. So then instead, because Dak will have plenty of bidders, I think Miami could be interested if they don't extend Tua. San Francisco could be interested. Pittsburgh, New England. New England's a really interesting fit to me. The Raiders, who I think would trade for Dak. And here, I looked at the Deshaun Watson trade, the Russell Wilson trade. I'm like, I look back at that. I'm like, I can't believe that was actually done. And I was a Russell fan at the time, and now he's my quarterback in Pittsburgh. Yay. I look back at that. I still can't believe it. It was like two first-rounders, two second-rounders, a bunch of NFL starters. It was bad. Here's the trade for Dallas and for, do we have this? Dallas and the Vegas Raiders. The Raiders get Dak Prescott. The Cowboys get a haul of picks. They get two first-rounders, 2025 and 2026. They get a 2026 third-rounder, and they get fourth-rounders from the next three NFL drafts, not including this one, 2024. So 2025 through 27, they get a fourth-rounder every year from the Raiders. They get two first-round picks from Vegas and a third-rounder in 2026 for Dak Prescott. And then you go all in on the rebuild. Jerry Jones said all in. Well, obviously, that has not come to fruition. Matter of fact, it's never been in fruition. For the record, if Michael Penix Jr. is taken by Dallas, do I think they're all of a sudden be all in with him? Of course not. They were never all in with Tony Romo. They were never all in with Dak Prescott. They're not going to be all in with Michael Penix Jr. and try and stack the deck, stack the roster around a cheap quarterback. Because guess what? That's not what Dallas does. I went through the list of free agents. The big free agent acquisitions when Dak costs literally nothing in his rookie contract, it was like Nolan Carroll, Alan Hearns, and Randall Cobb. And I don't think there was a single contract that was worth more than like $5 million. It was a disaster. So they're not going to put the talent free agency around Michael Penix Jr. Might as well stock draft picks. That's what I would do if I was Dallas, if I was not extending Dak Prescott. Is there validity to this in Adam Schefter? Well, it's from Schefter, so there's got to be some. I'm just saying, you look at Dallas right now, I look at that roster. That is not a contender. The only guy I think who won a Super Bowl with this roster, and it's even iffy with this guy, is Mahomes. I mean, you have CeeDee Lamb, who's amazing, and a bunch of guys after that. Bunch of guys. Brandon Cooks is way past his prime. Jalen Tolbert, you let go of Gallup. Ferguson's an okay tight end. He's nothing special. The offensive line got significantly worse. Zach Martin's older. It's a mess. The defense is, well, we saw what happened with a healthy Cowboys defense, obviously absent Trayvon Diggs against the Packers. That didn't work too well. So for this week's edition of Carving Up the Context, Dallas, if you don't extend Dak Prescott, and if and only if Michael Penix Jr. is available at the 24th pick, because y'all know I think Michael Penix Jr. is second to Caleb Williams. I'd take him over Daniels, May. I'd definitely take him over McCarthy, and I'd definitely take him over Bo Nix. Now, if it's Bo Nix, yeah, don't take Bo Nix. Roll with Dak. You'd be out of your mind to select Bo Nix with your first-round pick. But if Penix falls to you and you don't extend Dak, you would be out of your mind not to take him. So for this week's edition of Carving Up the Context, Dallas, if you don't extend Dak and Michael Penix Jr. is available, take him, trade Dak, trade Micah, get a host of picks because God knows you're not spending jack in free agency because Jerry Jones, Mr. Discount guy, Mr. Getting stuff at the discount store, load up the picks and rebuild. That is this week's edition of Carving Up the Context. Let's see what we got here. Patrick Brown is a big Cowboys fan. He's chiming in the comments section. I wouldn't be surprised if Penix Jr. is the pick. It's the typical player with injury history that Jerry would take a flyer on. The injury history, I get. I do. But those happened a long time ago. And now the concern in Dallas is offensive line, no Tyron Smith. We saw, by the way, Dak with no Tyron Smith in that Dolphins game. Dak played pretty well, but he had no protection. So you have that component. Patrick, $60 million will be $70 million in 2025 for Dak Prescott. If Jerry's going to blow it up, this is the year and start over in 2025. To me, start over this year if you're not extending Dak. Because they're like, we're going all in. All in with what? Dak, CD, and a Micah Parsons who doesn't show up in the second half of seasons? By the way, for the record, I don't think they're going to do what I just suggested they do. Because they're not, the Jones aren't smart business people as it pertains to football decisions. But if they don't extend Dak, it's what they should do. Patrick, Pat, this is unnecessary. This is an unnecessary shot at the six-time Super Bowl champion Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers Nation, let's well. See, did you have to say that? Did you have to say that? Listen, I will say now what I said when the Russell trade was done. Or it's Russell trade, Russell deal. It's a year for $1 million. Like, it's for nothing. Is he better than Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky? Combined. Yeah. Is he elite? Oh, heck no. Is he more like the 18th best quarterback, 19th best quarterback in the league? That's probably where he's at. But he's got a good OC in Arthur Smith, who's, oh my gosh, miles better than, well, just about everybody is, but miles better than, shoot, I'm forgetting the guy's name. Blanking on the offensive coordinator's name who was there a year ago, who was a disaster. Well, it's probably a good thing I've forgotten him because his name doesn't come to mind at this particular moment in time. But you got George Pickens. The Steelers are either going to draft a receiver or go get one in free agency. The offensive line's gotten better. We know what the defense is with TJ Watt. There you go. Patrick, I believe Micah's behavior during the last two seasons has worn thin. The All-Star Celebrity Game likely icing on the cake. I don't have an issue with the All-Star Celebrity Game. It's like, listen, if they ask you to do it, do it. I mean, Myles Garrett did it and that wasn't a problem. My issue with Micah is... This was mind-boggling to me, where, listen, if you want to have a podcast, my thing with athlete podcasts is this, and the last thing I want to sound like is the country club guy, like, oh, you only certain people are allowed here in this podcasting space. No. If you're an accomplished, Jason Kelce, Travis Kelce, Draymond Green, heck, now LeBron with J.J. Redick, if you are a guy who, or woman, who has proven, okay, this podcast thing is not going to be a distraction. It's not going to interfere with their play on the in between the lines. We're good. Micah at the end of seasons has kind of disappeared. I mean, name one. Micah Parsons played 4 playoff games. Name one moment in any of them. Doesn't exist. He's been, I mean, last year against the Packers, he was it's probably the worst game of his career. I think he had like one pressure in the game. He's terrible. Patrick, and he's 100%, Patrick's 100% right here. Micah isn't in the same atmosphere as TJ Watt and Myles Garrett. He can't impact the game the same way that those two can. They still find a way to get home. Yeah, they do. And even though, by the way, I hear this from Cowboys fans all the time, and I love Cowboys fans. We got a bunch here at the Grid Network. We got a whole Cowboys, actually, we got two Cowboys podcasts. EJ Savage, Boys of the Zone, shout out to him. Cowboys Cam fans, shout out to those guys. Love all four. They're fantastic human beings and content creators. Sometimes I hear from them. Sometimes you hear from Cowboys fans. Oh, Micah Parsons gets held every play. Yes, so does TJ freaking Watt. He still gets the quarterback. He still led the league in sacks 3 times. Like, I don't want to hear it from Micah. So, yeah, that's what I'd do if I were Dallas if you don't extend Dak. Because Lord knows they ain't competing for anything this year other than a potential NFC East championship. And we know nobody's won that division two years in a row since like the Bush administration. It's kind of mind-boggling. Okay, transitioning now, Bryson's Best 10. So 2 Wednesday segments to do, Bryson's Best 10, which follows Carving Up the Context. So It's quite simple, actually. I just rank the 10 best of whatever seems relevant in the sports world. Even, again, I've suggested this is a new segment introduced right before football season. When we get to the summer and it's kind of like the dead time, the dead period of the sports calendar, I'm kind of the mindset like, you know what? Let's go for Bryson's best 10 of other like non-sports topics. I think that'll be fun to do. But the NBA season is winding down. We have less than a week left, and then the in-season play-in tournament starts a week from now. Tuesday, Wednesday, around that time. So I felt like it was fitting to kind of look at, okay, who are the 10 best teams in the NBA? I was actually shocked. I still think the West is way better than the East. I was actually shocked at how many East teams I had in this list. But nonetheless, let's go and get the background music right now for Bryce's best 10 NBA playoffs. The 10th best team in the NBA right now is, this is going to shock y'all, the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are the 10th best team in the National Basketball Association. Here's why. So look, do I think they're a title contender? I don't. I simply do not see the Clippers as a team that can win the championship this year. And I do think the Lakers are better. Here's the problem. Lakers are, when the Warriors win on Thursday, when they win tomorrow, Lakers are going to be sitting at the 10th seed and are likely going to stay there because Golden State's going to run the table. We'll see what happens with Sacramento. But Lakers have a tendency, they have to win twice to get in the playoffs and probably have to beat Denver in round one. That doesn't seem terribly likely. So you look at the Clippers, listen, they won five straight. They won last night. I'm about to talk about this game in the next segment. Won by a million points or up by a million points over the Phoenix Suns in Phoenix yesterday with no Kawhi Leonard, with no James Harden. Russell Westbrook, say what you want about the guy, and I've said plenty negative about Russ's game. They're 7-2 since he's been inserted back into the starting lineups. They're playing better. Russ has been a good fit for them. Paul George is playing really, really good basketball this season. Ty Lue's a great coach. Do I trust in the playoffs? Not in the slightest outside of Kawhi and Ty Lue, which that might be enough to get him a series. Nothing beyond that. The Clippers are the 10th best team in the National Basketball Association. At number 9, I know this is lower than what most people have them, but I don't care. Minnesota Timberwolves are the 9th best team in the National Basketball Association, and here's why. So, listen, the Cat injury was what most thought would sort of do them in. Like, man, Cat's out. Now they're not going to get the one seed. And Anthony Edwards says, hey, watch this. I'm going to put this team on my back. I'm going to go berserk. He had a 50-burger last night in Washington. And tonight, obviously, they play the Nuggets in a game that will probably decide the one seed. So we could be sitting here 3-4 days from now. Wow. With Cat out for a substantial portion of the season, Timberwolves have the best record in a stacked Western Conference. Yes, that's impressive. And yes, I love Anthony Edwards like everybody else loves him. Here's the problem. Here's a big problem. In the Anthony Edwards era, they have a grand total of 3 playoff wins. In the last few years, Karl-Anthony Towns, no show in the playoffs. Chris Finch has shown an inability to adjust in big postseason moments. Down the stretch of games especially. Remember, they had some huge blown fourth quarter leads to the Grizzlies in that playoff series 2 years ago against an equally young Memphis team. It was a disaster. And Rudy Gobert is a different monster in the playoffs and not in a good way. Rudy, you put him on the perimeter, go small, put Rudy on the perimeter, can't guard anybody, can't guard me. Okay, he's not the defensive player of the year in that regard that many believe him to be. Mike Conley's still effective, but he is getting up there in age. This feels like if the Timberwolves go deep, go anywhere, it's going to be an Anthony Edwards, you know, just show in the playoffs and really establishing himself as potentially one of the 5 best players in the NBA already this early into his career. Other than that, I do not trust the Timberwolves at all, but I do respect the record. Therefore, I have them as the 9th best team in the NBA. At number 8, it is the New York Knicks. The Knicks are the 8th best team in the NBA, and here's why. So they would have been higher if Julius Randle had come back. Here's the thing, though. We know Julius Randle tends to struggle in the playoffs in 2021 and last year. Had some horrible shooting splits. I mean, shooting like 4-8s in many of those games. Jalen Brunson is having an unbelievable season. Is making a very strong case that he very well could be, you know, second team, the first guard on second team All-NBA before Steph Curry. We know Luka and Shea are going to be the first two guards on All-NBA team and on the first team. But ever since this team traded for OG Anunoby, well above 500, excellent on the defensive end. Josh Hart's played good minutes. They have some good size. Mitchell Robinson. The problem with the New York Knicks, and I love Tom Thibodeau like everybody else does, but Thibodeau teams tend to really run out of gas in the playoffs. Like, he just runs these guys into the ground for 82 games. And by the time the second round rolls around, these guys are like, man, I don't have any gas left in the tank. So I think Brunson's good enough to win a playoff series, and maybe even 2 if they get the right matchup But the loss of Julius Randle, listen, say what you want about him in the playoffs. He is an all-star. He is a 20-point-per-game guy. It will hurt for the Knicks to miss him. Even Chinzo, by the way, has been a really good addition for them. Said that when they acquired him last summer. But Knicks are a good defensive team. Can make things hard on a lot of teams in the playoffs. If they match up against Milwaukee, I'd take the Knicks in five games, honest to God. I think they're that much better than the Bucks. The Knicks are the eighth-best team in the NBA. At number seven, did not think I'm having this high a week ago. But, hey, when new data presents itself, you got to adjust. The Philadelphia 76ers. Philadelphia 76ers are the seventh best team in the NBA, and here's why. So, since Embiid's come back, they haven't lost. They're 6-0. Maxi in the game Embiid missed had a 50-burger. Listen, you look at this Philadelphia team. They upgraded a head coach from a year ago in Nick Nurse, who's done a really good job, has weathered the storm as good as he could have with the Embiid absence in the couple months prior to last week. Embiid's been awesome. Embiid's come back, and I've been critical of Embiid's playoff history, which is why, to me, given how he's looked with fresh legs, which we don't see from Joel more times than not, he tends to wear down at the end of regular seasons. Hey, his legs seem to be fresh this year. He seems to be healthy this year. If you can't get to the conference finals as an MVP, as a two-time scoring champion, that's a problem. Every MVP outside of Embiid has at least gotten to the conference finals. We'll see if he's able to do so this season. But Tyrese Maxey's your two, far more reliable than James Harden. You got Tobias Harris as your three. A lot of nice, you know, reliable role players. Kelly Oubre's had a pretty good season. They're good defensively. Nick Nurse is a championship-winning head coach and is a much better fit for this franchise than Doc Rivers was. Listen, again, if they match up against Milwaukee, I'm absolutely taking Philadelphia. If you're Boston, I'd take Boston over Philadelphia, but man, that's a terrible first-round matchup for the Celtics. You don't want to have to, right off the bat, have to go six, seven games with Philadelphia, wear yourself down going to the second round. You want to face an Atlanta, a Chicago, like an Indiana, a team that you match up better with. That'd be a bad matchup if Philadelphia gets in and faces Boston. It'd be a horrible matchup if they face the Milwaukee Bucks. I like how Philly's playing right now. They're well-coached. Pressure's on Embiid now, man. Can you deliver in the postseason? I have my doubts, but we'll see. But right now, the Sixers are the seventh best team in the NBA. At number six, y'all are going to think I'm crazy, but hey, previous postseasons backs me up on this, okay? The Miami Heat are the sixth best team in the NBA, and here's why. So, listen, Miami right now sitting at the eighth seed. They barely won a game last night against the Atlanta Hawks with no Trae Young in double overtime. Took them double OT to get the W. I get it. But they got to the finals in 2020. They were a shot away from the finals 2 years ago. They got to the finals last year, for the record, as the eighth seed. Knocked off one seed Milwaukee. Knocked off five seed Knicks. They knocked off two seed Boston in seven games and won game seven in Boston. Took three games in that series in Boston. When you have the best coach in the NBA by the name of Eric Spoelstra, when you have Jimmy Butler, who's one of the best player performers we have in this league, when you have Bam Adebayo, when you have these young guys like Jovic and Hawkes who are stepping up and giving good minutes, Tyler Hero, unlike a year ago, is going to be back and healthy, ready to go for the playoffs. That is a big, big factor, this Miami Heat team. They are the very definition of a sleeper, of a team that if you're, again, a Boston, a New York Knicks in the first round, you're like, you have to be kidding me. This is who we draw in the first round? Now, we'll see what happens. They'll likely face Philadelphia in the play-in game. Philadelphia's got a pretty good shot to win that, but don't be shocked if Miami goes and wins. They did win a game six 2 years ago in Philadelphia to eliminate the Sixers. But again, playoff Jimmy, Bam's great in the playoffs. They have young guys stepping up. Hero's really good, and Eric Spoelstra gets the best out of everybody on that basketball team because he's the best coach in the NBA. And that evil genius juice that Pat Riley, I don't know what he does, what he pours into this team. It's incredible. I have no evidence from this season to believe in the Miami Heat, but I do have three of the last four postseasons prior to this one to say they can win a playoff series or two or three. Who knows? Miami Heat, sixth best team in the NBA. At number five, it is the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are the fifth best team in the National Basketball Association, and here's why. So, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be a finals for MVP. He's going to be first team All-NBA. He missed a few games, came back and dropped 38 in a comeback win over the Sacramento Kings. This OKC team, I get it. They're really young. Shai's young. Chet. Jalen Williams. I mean, it's a very... Lou Dort's like the old guy, and he's in his mid to late 20s. So this is a very... They're the anti-Milwaukee in a certain way. Mark Dagnall's done a phenomenal job. If I had a vote for Coach of the Year, he'd get it. I think he's done a fantastic job with this group. I think this team as a whole, Isaiah Joe, obviously, this entire team as currently constructed, very young, has an incredibly bright future. I said years ago that the Thunder were going to win the 2031 NBA championship because of the picks they acquired. Sam Presti's a great GM. We know that because of his history of drafting KD, Westbrook, and Harden in three straight drafts. I think this team could get to the Western Conference Finals and maybe even deeper. When you have a scoring presence, a scoring threat the way that Shea has been, maybe the playoff lights are too bright for them. Only time will tell if they face a more experienced Golden State, Lakers team, something like that. But right now, where I look at it with the Oklahoma City Thunder, I think they're a dangerous team offensively, can play good defense, especially Lou Dort, who can lock up your best offensive player and be a good shot maker, good three-point shooter on the other end. I like OKC. I think they're very well coached. They have a very bright future. Maybe I'm buying them more this year than I should just because of their youth, but from what I've seen from Shea, I believe in the guy. I believe in this young team. Jalen Williams, I think, is going to be a breakout star in this year's playoffs. Oklahoma City Thunder, the fifth best team in the NBA. At number four, you knew you were going to see it eventually, the Golden State Warriors. My Warriors are the fourth best team in the NBA right now. Here's why. So again, we have the numbers. I have them left over from the first segment. Might as well use them again. Last nine games, Golden State fourth in offensive rating. You know, I wouldn't even go through that whole list. They're basically first in every shooting statistic, top five in every offensive statistic, top five in every defensive statistic, and have won more games than anybody outside of Dallas in the last nine games. In the last 36 games, they're tied for third in wins at 25-11. They're top 10 in every offensive and defensive statistic. By the way, a team that I'm like, oh, I hear, oh, man, the lack of size in Golden State. Yeah, they're literally first in the NBA in rebounds this season. So obviously, I hadn't heard them that bad. When you have a Steph Curry who's, you know, four-time champion, one time should be more, finals MVP, two-time MVP, and this season is just slowly, you saw it last night, right? 6-for-6 against the Lakers from three, slowly ramping up into playoff Steph. You see, obviously, guys like Draymond Green, who's played unbelievable. Warriors do not lose very often. When he doesn't get thrown out of games, Klay has averaged 20 a game. Over the last 20-odd games or so. He's averaged over 20 a game in the last nine in this Warriors hot streak. They went 16 of their last 20 games on the road, which they couldn't do to save their lives last season. I'm sorry, if you're OKC, if you're Minnesota, you draw Golden State in the first round, you're thinking, you have got to be kidding me. We fought this hard, won 50-plus games to face those guys? Yeah, Golden State, elite offensive team, elite defensive team, by every metric imaginable, is a top five team in the NBA, and that's where they're at. The Golden State Warriors, the fourth best team in the NBA. At number three may shock everybody. I'm not going to lie. It may shock a lot of people, but again, I didn't think when I did my pretenders and contenders segment coming out of the All-Star break, I had this team as a pretender. I didn't think this team could go that deep in the playoffs at all. Given how they played in the last month and a half, I've changed my opinion on that. Folks, the Dallas Mavericks are the third best team in the NBA, and here's why. Luka's numbers are just stupid. He's averaging 34-35 a game, almost averaging a 34-35 point triple-double, doing it on efficient shooting, and we know what Luka is in the playoffs. Okay, Luka Doncic is a 32-point triple-double waiting to happen in the postseason. And again, much of the skepticism, including for myself, is that, man, Luka plays too much on ball. If you watch Dallas recently, they play quicker, more up-tempo. Jason Kidd's got them to do that, and Jason Kidd's done a really good job this season. Dallas, best record in the NBA over the last nine games. Kyrie Irving has really stepped up, and no off-court issues, no drama, has mostly been healthy this season. That's a really talented backcourt. It's a good defensive team. This team has been excellent defensively and has had a good lob threat ever since they traded for Daniel Gafford, who's been a great fit with Luka and with Kyrie. Tim Hardaway, Exa made a clutch shot the other night to help beat the Houston Rockets. I think this is a really talented team. A lot of shot makers. They're way better than they've been in defense in previous years. Defensively, Jason Kidd's an excellent coach. Luka in the playoffs is a monster. Kyrie as the two in the playoffs. I've criticized him in the playoffs as the first option. As the number two option, he did win a championship in 2016 for all it's worth and hit one of the biggest shots of all time at the Cavs. So, and to beat my Warriors, which still haunts me this day. But this Dallas team, elite offensively, elite defensively, and we've seen Luka in the playoffs. They're really hard to guard. They're really hard. It's just as hard as it is to guard in the regular season. He kind of amps up his postseason performance for his regular season performance, which is quite rare. It's like Mahomes stuff. Dallas Mavericks, third best team in the NBA. At number two, the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are the second best team in the National Basketball Association. Here is why. So, listen, Boston is absolutely housing teams right now. Okay, Boston's going to win 65-ish games this year. They got the one seed by 14 games over the two seed Milwaukee Bucks. If you look at the NBA standings right now in the Western Conference, okay, the gap between one and two seed out east is 14 games. Gap between one and two seed in the West, there isn't one. They're tied, okay? You look at, I mean, Houston is a 16 game gap between the one seed Timberwolves and Nuggets. They're the 11 seed and out of the play-in tournament. So the gap between Boston and the rest of the East is substantial. Jaylen Brown's playing great basketball as of late. Jason Tatum is, I think, easily one of the 7 or 8 best players in the NBA and is a great postseason performer, as I did a segment on, contrary to popular belief. I don't trust Joe Mazzulla in the playoffs. That's kind of what holds me back with this team. They're great defensively. Porzingis is playing well. Derek White has been... If Derek White's your fifth offensive option, man, you're in good hands. Drew Holiday has been... made the impact on this team I knew he'd make. He's great defensively, really good shot creator and taker on the offensive end. Again, it's the coaching that I don't particularly trust, but for what it's worth, and I talked about this coming into the season, Sam Cassell is on the coaching staff. So listen, this Boston Celtics team, given how dominant they've been in the regular season, given how close they've come in the last two postseasons to winning the title, a title or bust this season for the Boston Celtics, and there's no other way around it. And it's the same case with the team I have at number one. I think it's pretty obvious. The Denver Nuggets are the best team in the NBA, okay? Denver is at number one, and here's why. So they've looked slightly more vulnerable as of late without Jamal Murray. Now they beat the Utah Jazz last night. The Jazz are tanking at this point. But Jokic is having a great season. He's probably going to win MVP again for the third time in his career. Michael Malone's a great coach. Michael Porter Jr., you know, when his brother's not gambling, you know, the Porter Jr. name tends to be a proud one in NBA circles. Once Jamal Murray gets back, assuming he is able to come back and his knee's ready to go, we know he's capable of doing in the postseason. We know the home court advantage that Denver has in the postseason. They only lost one home game all last season in the postseason. Smacked Minnesota, who they play tonight for the one seed. They smacked the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. I don't care that the series went 6 games. Dominated the Phoenix Suns in the second round. Dominated a really, really nice Miami Heat team in the NBA Finals. Jokic is going to be the best player in any series that he's in. He's a matchup nightmare on the offensive end. You got to kind of pick your poison. You want him to be a scorer. You want him to be a distributor. It's a really tough decision for every team around the NBA who's going to face the Denver Nuggets. I think they're clearly the favorite to win the Western Conference. I think Golden State and Dallas could make it hard for them. OKC as well. But they should get to the NBA Finals. And they should win the championship. So that is Bryce's best 10 NBA teams to close the regular season. We have a few games left. You know, teams have 2-3 games left in their season, but that's where I'm at. To recap, 10th best team. So from 10 to 1, I got the Clippers, Timberwolves, Knicks, 76ers, Heat, Thunder, Warriors, Mavericks, Celtics, and at number 1, the defending NBA champion, Denver Nuggets. Yes, I have Golden State 4th. There you go. Before we get out of here, this is insane. I thought my phone was glitching. I thought my app was glitching when I saw this. Los Angeles Clippers beat the Suns last night, 105-92. That may sound like a generic, comfortable NBA regular season win. Until you look or watch the game and saw that with just over a minute and change left in the first quarter, the Los Angeles Clippers, who, mind you, were on the road, who, mind you, without James Harden and, more importantly, Kawhi Leonard, against a fully healthy Phoenix Suns team. This doesn't sound real. The Los Angeles Clippers over the Phoenix Suns at one point led 35-4. Just let that sink in for a moment. With a little over a minute to go, the Phoenix Suns in a professionally organized National Basketball Association game that matters, this wasn't no preseason game, scored 4 points. Devin Booker shot 1-for-11 for the field for the game. Kevin Durant wasn't very good. Again, he dropped 21, but did so in 22 shots, so wasn't the typical efficient KD we've come to know and love. This is, again, the Suns aren't bad enough to be down 35-4 in any game, okay? It's just they weren't ready to play. That falls on the coach. That falls on the players. But it also falls on the thing that I said about the Suns, or the multiple things I said about the Suns coming into this season. When they made the Bradley Beal trade, and everybody's like, oh, Suns are the biggest threat now, the Denver Nuggets. I mean, hey, they did take them 6 games a year ago. That's deeper than anybody else took them. Okay, you replace an old, aging Chris Paul with Bradley Beal, who's averaged 30 a game in multiple seasons, to go with Booker and Kevin Durant, and here we go. Here's the problem. Every single decision that the Phoenix Suns made this offseason has contributed to their demise this year. Started with the Beal trade. The Beal trade was the first big domino to fall. You trade Chris Paul to the Wizards. Obviously, the Wizards end up trading him to the Warriors for Jordan Poole. Chris Paul, by the way, been pretty good this season off the bench. They get Bradley Beal, who, while effective, is kind of an injury-riddled, older, bad defensive guy at this stage in his career. And what the Phoenix Suns did is what a teenager on NBA 2K, I almost said 2K17, it's the last great 2K game, what any teenager on NBA 2K would do. Let's just load up the best scores and we're going to win the championship. We're on my league. We're going to win the championship. Here's the problem. Actual basketball doesn't work like video game basketball. It's not contrary to popular belief. It's not the same thing. You need this thing. Dang, it escapes my mind. What is it called? A point guard. You know, those are kind of important. You know, the Lakers needed Magic Johnson. The Warriors needed Steph. And the Pistons needed Isaiah Thomas. And the Jazz, even though they didn't win, they needed this guy by the name of John Stockton. And even guys who haven't won, well, Kidd won a championship late in his career. But Jason Kidd, he mattered. So did Chris Paul and Steve Nash. Point guards make a big impact towards winning championships, believe it or not. And they let one, albeit aging, but they let one of the greatest point guards in the history of the game of basketball walk. Or they traded him, rather, for a player who's a lesser version of Devin Booker, who's a lesser version of Kevin Durant. They basically, the Suns have the same player, just in lesser versions of themselves. KD's awesome. So's Booker, but he's not KD. And Beal's really good, but he's not Booker. And he's obviously not Kevin Durant. Not to mention, we've known for the last couple of seasons, or the last couple of years prior to this one, that the relationship between DeAndre Ayton and Monty Williams was unable to salvage at that point. It got bad. So you had to split them up. Well, here's the problem. They fired Monty Williams, and they traded Ayton. So they separated them, but none of those guys are with the Phoenix Suns right now. Monty Williams, you know, coach him to the finals. You can diss him for what's going on with the Pistons. Pistons sucked before Monty Williams got there. Okay, Pistons are poorly run before Monty Williams even got to that organization. So you have that component. Then you trade DeAndre Ayton, who, listen, for what it's worth, I get the Portland Trailblazers are bad. I get the expectations aren't as high for Domin Ayton, as he's known as, but he did drop a 30-point double-double last night, for what it's worth, against the New Orleans Pelicans. So and then you go out and get Yusuf Nurkic, who has an injury history, who's not good in the defensive end, and who can get muscled and bullied by Draymond Green. We literally saw it in a game 2 months ago in Golden State. Look it up. So a bad defensive team with no point guard and an injury history and a downgraded head coach with an inconsistent bench. Yeah, that's going to win the title. Yeah, it actually resulted in being down 35-4 to the Clippers. And they, right now as we sit here today, are the 7th seed in the Western Conference. Teams like the Clippers are above them. Dallas, New Orleans, they're currently a game back of the Pelicans. That's going to be the battle, you know, between those two to see who gets to the 6th seed and avoids the play-in tournament. But again, I talked about this with Phoenix a couple weeks ago when they lost to, I forget, who did they lose to prior to me talking about this? They lost to the Spurs. Lost to the Spurs, who actually are playing better as of late. But I said, Phoenix, their last 10 games of the season are brutal. At Denver, who, to their credit, they beat. At OKC, who blew them out. At New Orleans, they beat. Cleveland, who's not playing well at all, they beat. They beat the Timberwolves. But then they lost at home to the Pelicans. They got housed at home by the Clippers. That's their last home game. They finish the season at LA Clippers tonight. On the road in Sacramento on Friday. On the road in Minnesota, who's probably going to be fighting for the 1 seed to finish the regular season. Folks, there's a very good chance, very good chance, Phoenix falls to the 8 seed and has to win at least one play-in game just to get in the playoffs for the Clippers. I'm sorry, the Clippers, the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, or the Thunder. KD's old team, ironically, knocks them out in round 1. They're not good defensively, don't have a point guard, have an injury history, and downgraded a head coach. This was never, at any point in time, no matter how great KD and Devin Booker are and how good Bradley Beal still is, this was never, at any particular point in time this season, going to be a title contender because it wasn't built like one. The Suns aren't a particularly long team. They don't have, again, they have good shooters. Again, Booker, KD, good shooters. Beal, they have Eric Gordon coming off the bench. By and large, not a consistent three-point shooting team, not a consistent bench. I've always been a Frank Vogel defender. I think he's better than what Darvin Ham is now at the Lakers. But is he Monty Williams? No, Monty Williams coached the team to the finals. Well, Frank Vogel won a title. Yeah, he had LeBron and AD. I'd hope he won a title. This idea that this was going to work. And I'm here, oh, the Suns, the most disappointing team of the season. Not to me. I have the Suns about 4 or 5 seed. This is kind of about, I mean, how many games the Suns won this season? 45? won 46 games this season, rather. It's about where I had them. Mid-40s win team, high-40s win team out in round one. If they get the right matchup out in round two. So, listen, I was shocked to see 35-4. I was shocked to see that. But them losing these games to undermanned teams down the stretch does not surprise me at all because the team's poorly built. Like, they almost have... What's the NFL equivalent of Matt Ishbia? I'm trying to think of NFL owners, impulsive owners. You could say Ursay. See, Ishbia is like the anti-Jerry Jones, where Jerry Jones is an egomaniacal, bad GM. Thing is, he doesn't go for it. Ishbia goes for it. The problem is Ishbia goes for it, makes the wrong moves. Like, it's mind-boggling. You trade Chris Paul for a guy who doesn't even fit in your rotation. Or if he fits in the rotation, he's good enough, obviously, to be in it. He's a good enough start, of course. But if it doesn't fit with the guys you have, it's just a series of bad basketball decisions over this offseason is why the Suns sit here today trying to avoid the play-in tournament. It's no surprise. No matter how good KD's been, how good Booker's been, this is where they're at. So, yeah, Phoenix was never a title contender, and God knows they certainly aren't today. Nonetheless, though, we got just a few games left in the NBA season. Again, the big game tonight, probably the biggest game left of the NBA regular season, is Minnesota-Denver tonight. It's Timberwolves-Nuggets. Both teams sitting in there right now with the same record at the number one seed, both teams trying to fend off Oklahoma City, who's a game back of them. Denver 6.5-point favorite at home. That game probably decides the one seed. Now, is Jamal Murray back tonight? I may make an impromptu prediction. Is Jamal Murray back? Let's see. I'm trying to check because I'm curious. If the Nuggets have their number two guy to Jokic, a little quick research time here. Let me get some. Okay, Jamal Murray came back the other night and dropped 28. So there you go. Last night and dropped 28. So Jamal Murray's back. Michael Porter Jr. is a game time decision, according to ESPN, as is Aaron Gordon. So that's big. I'll go Denver, though. I think Denver gets the one seed. What's going to happen is Denver's going to get the one seed. Golden State's going to go 3-0. Sacramento's going to go 1-2. Golden State is the eight seed, wins their playing game against Phoenix or New Orleans or whoever the heck you want to put in front of them. Golden State's the seven seed, and Golden State-Denver match up in the Western Conference Finals. Just calling it right now. Just laying it out there for you. All right, that is all the time I have for today's show. Appreciate everybody stopping by. Apologies for about an hour ago with some technical difficulties, with some Wi-Fi connection problems. Thankfully, we were able to get those resolved pretty quickly. So we'll edit that for the podcast audio, not have that long lull of silence. That was, I imagine, no fun. So thanks y'all for sticking around. Be sure to catch Carving Up Live on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time, right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. On Friday's show, I'm going to be giving you my All-NBA teams and my award prediction winners, or award winner predictions. If I had a vote, I do this segment every Friday during the football season and the occasional segment from time to time called
Betting Man.
If I were a betting man, I need to call it If I Had an NBA Vote, an NBA media vote, and that's what I'll call it on Friday's show. So that's what we'll do. But a lot of stuff going into Friday's show. We'll probably be talking Warriors. We'll be talking Lakers. We'll be talking, NFL stuff, NFL draft stuff. So very excited about that. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the show. Please be sure to like, share, comment, and please take 2 seconds out of your day. Hit that big red subscribe button down there. It helps the channel grow exponentially. We're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers before the NBA playoffs, which start a week from now. So listen, we can get the momentum behind the show, get us to 1,000, tell your friends about it, your family about it. If you haven't subscribed, please, again, take a couple seconds, join the Carving Up family by hitting that big red subscribe button on YouTube. And just as importantly, be sure to go subscribe to the Grid Network. That is GRYD, the Grid Podcast Network, right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your favorite podcast, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, any and everywhere that you get your favorite podcast. The 8 o'clock spot on the Grid Network, a special Wednesday edition, kicks off in a little over a half hour, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. I'd check that out if I were you. Now, listen, I know there's a lot of options out there. The 8 o'clock spot is our game show on the Grid Network. I'm the host / judge / moderator. A lot of stuff to get into. We're going to be talking Caitlin Clark. We're going to be talking Cowboys, the Cowboys quarterback situation I talked about earlier. That's going to be a topic. Warriors, Lakers, who's got a better chance of winning the title? Who's to blame for the Suns' disappointing season? A lot of stuff to get into the 8 o'clock spot, so I advise you to please tune in at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time in just a half hour live on the Grid Network, YouTube, and on Twitter. We will see y'all. Well, I'll see y'all in just a half hour on the 8 o'clock spot on Carving Up Live. However, I'll see y'all this Friday in a couple days, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. Please be sure to stay safe. Please be sure to take care of your physical as well as your mental health. And please, please, please be sure to contact your local state representatives and senators to demand change for gun violence in America, no matter where you lean, right, left, center, doesn't matter. This is a problem that affects each and every one of us as Americans in this great country. No matter what anybody on either side of the aisle tries to tell you, there is no one solution to this. There's a ton of things that we need to do to address this. So let's do our part as citizens of this great nation and address this because it needs to be. All right, 8 o'clock spot in a half hour, carving it up in a couple of days. NBA stretch run. Baseball is still irrelevant, and the NFL is king of everything. And at this point, Caitlin Clark's the queen of everything. See y'all on Friday. Please stay safe out there. God bless y'all. Peace out. That was a bad transition. God bless y'all. Peace out. I'll do better on Friday. Thanks so much for watching the show on YouTube, and be sure to go click that big red subscribe button and check out the other clips and full shows from Carving It Up Live, as well as our other incredible content creators here on the Grid Network.